went to Indiana Comic Con a few weeks ago, and that was a lot of fun. I did meet Clayton Crane. That was cool. He was kind of timid. He was a very nice creator. I got stuck behind someone trying to get like 10 comics graded. They were going to have Clayton Crane sign the comics and then get them CGC graded. And that drives me nuts. If you are a listener and you get stuff graded, please write to us and tell me why you think this is cool and this is a good thing to do, because this, I don't know, it's one of the things about the industry that irritates me. I'll never quite understand. If you're going to get your shit signed, you want to frame your comics, that's cool, because then you can remove them. But if you get it graded, it's in the slab forever. And you want to sell a comic in the slab, that's fine, but then you can't remove it because then it loses its monetary value. And I don't understand it. But hit up a Charlie Cox Q&A panel, and that was a lot of fun. A lot of the questions, I mean, most of the questions were about Daredevil, but a lot of the questions were about Stardust, which I still have not seen. Apparently I think that was his first film, based off the Neil Gaiman novel, and some boardwalk questions and stuff like that. But no, Charlie Cox was awesome. The Q&A was a lot of fun. I posted a little clip on the Facebook. It's really it for Indiana Comic Con. Picked up some cool books and just a fun convention overall. And then C2E2 was last weekend. Out of all of the comic conventions that I've been to, this year's C2E2 was by far my favorite. The panels were great this year. The creators I got to meet were phenomenal. I got to meet Greg Rucka, which was insanely exciting. Listeners, if you haven't or do not follow our Instagram, go follow it at Comics Reviews, and you can see some of the updates that I posted from C2E2. But yeah, one of the pictures I posted was meeting Greg Rucka, and that was a lot of fun. He couldn't have been nicer. He was one of the nicest creators I've ever met. So incredibly kind to every single person in line. His line was absolutely huge too. Took the time to have a nice conversation with everyone. Didn't mind taking pictures. And it was funny because while I was taking a picture with him, he was coming out from behind his table, and then Dan Jurgens came over. And this was first thing in the morning on Saturday. And Dan Jurgens came over and started talking about how Greg Rucka is doing the industry well by being one of the creators to show up on time and early to conventions. And then Greg Rucka looked at me and he said, "If Dan Jurgens says you're doing something right, then you're doing something right." And that's great for the industry. I went to, on Sunday morning, I went to Yannick Paquette's table. He was the artist on Swamp Things. Scott Snyder's run of Swamp Thing, and he worked with Grant Morrison on Wonder Woman Earth 1. And I was the first one at his table, and so I got Wonder Woman signed, and we had like a 15-minute conversation just about, because I asked him if a lot of people were bringing the Wonder Woman book to him or buying a lot of his Wonder Woman prints because of the movie coming up, and most of our conversation was about Wonder Woman and the state of the DC movies, and it was really awesome, and like, he could not have been nicer either. This was one of the most, despite how busy and insane and hectic and anxiety inducing these conventions can be, especially when you have, I have to imagine there were 80,000 people throughout the weekend at C2E2, because it keeps growing every single year, and that was the busiest Saturday I've ever seen. But just these creators, and conventions have to be so hectic on them and just so draining, and just a lot of them, I could see why they're kind of, they isolate themselves at the tables and they just want to work on their commissions and make their money, and you know, it's a good place for them to promote their work and everything, but you know, you can become a bit reclusive amongst the crowd. But everyone that I had the pleasure of meeting was super thrilled, and just like, you felt like you were the only person there, and it was incredible. It was just the best experience I've had with creators yet. Met Mark Guggenheim, and
you got Guggenheimed.
I did, in the best way possible. He, because I brought a couple issues of X-Men and an issue of The Flash, The Fastest Man Alive, number 13, and he looked at it, and he's like, "Oh, cool, awesome. And he signed it. He's like, hey, I wrote this. I was like, yes, you did.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah, because, you know, you're in that setting. Because he was signing at the Marvel table, so you kind of expect only people are going to... This isn't always the case, but people probably mostly bring Marvel books. So I was one of the first in line. I was probably the third person to get a book signed by him, and it was the first person to get one of his DC comics signed. So
you didn't want to go the Step Brothers route of, you know, getting the sword signed by Randy Jackson.
I thought about that. The amount of exhibitors selling weapons for people's cosplay, I probably could have picked something up. What else are you going to do when you see Randy Jackson walking down the street? I had a lot more to talk about before it actually came time, and now, to the listener, I apologize. I've been sick the past couple days. If I do sound a little stuffed up, it's because I am. But
yeah, sorry, Mike.
I'm also hopped up on medication right now, too, so it's...
Throw some Tussin on it.
Messing with my brain waves, so... But, no, some of the panels were great. I got denied entry to a Marvel panel because they came up to me and they said, where's your pass? I said, the hell are you talking about? And
what are you talking about, Marvel?
They're like, your Marvel pass. And I was like, wasn't that my entry to the convention? And they said, no, this is a Marvel Unlimited panel. And I was like, oh, you motherfuckers.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So if I was there, I could have gotten in.
Exactly. You would have been able to go. And I was like, what the hell? You're rewarding. And I'm not going to believe, because I, every day I am one step closer to subscribing to Marvel Unlimited, and I have no gripes with that. But I'm like, I get punished for buying Marvel Comics weekly when the people who subscribe get rewarded, you know, subscribe to the, and are a few months behind. And I'm like, all right, Marvel wants to play that game. Maybe I'm just going to start doing that too.
Actually, I don't think I would have been able to get in, and I'll tell you why, because there's different tiers in the Marvel Unlimited. There's the month by month, which okay. I used to do, but then I'm like, this is stupid, I'm never going to cancel it. So then I switched to the yearly thing, but I didn't do the, what do you call it, the Unlimited Plus. I think that if you want exclusive stuff, you have to do the Marvel, like, Unlimited Plus.
Okay.
So I probably wouldn't have gotten either.
So that means, like, if you did that, then I'm sure when they come around to New York Comic Con, if you wanted to get into those panels, you could.
Yeah. But I don't like the sight of other people, so I don't really have to worry about all of this.
Fair enough.
But I'm just saying, if you do end up doing it, I think. I'm on the website now. If monthly or annual, you get instant streaming access to their comics, or 17,000 plus, they say. Members only deals on comics and merchandise. And here's where it starts to distinguish itself. If you have the plus, you get exclusive Hasbro limited edition item. Oh, it says Captain Marvel, but I'd imagine it changes from year to year.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
And you get three variants, which it probably changes. You get this Eye of Agamotto pin.
That's pretty dope. Is it
patch?
Is it an enamel pin?
I have no idea. And it says invites to incredible events. Yeah, so don't feel bad. They would have kicked my ass out too.
How much more a year is that than the one that you subscribe to?
It's actually $30 more a year.
Okay.
Which is not terrible, because...
Dude, with the three variants...
Yes.
And then the figure, and then the other stuff, I feel like that's completely worth it.
The only thing is, you lock yourself in. Like, I switched to the annual, because I'm like, I will save money, because it went from $9.99 a month, which is, I don't know how many dollars a year. But I think how it works out is, if I could do this really quickly on this calculator, 999 times 12. Okay, actually, your best bet is doing the one that I'm doing. That's the cheapest, where it's a year and it ends up being like $583 a month and $69 for the whole year. But $99 will get you all this exclusive stuff. Plus, it ends up being $8.25 a month. So actually, the most expensive one is the monthly one. That's... which will make you pay approximately $120 a year.
Yeah. That makes sense. They want to lock you in for that year. They want that year commitment. So.
Yeah. But, it, I mean, if you are interested, you can get some variants and some cool stuff.
This sounds awesome, actually. Maybe. And then maybe next year at C2E2, I won't get denied entry to a panel with Kieran Gillen and Charles Soule. So I was all excited to it, too. I didn't realize it was a Marvel Unlimited panel, because I know they do those things. They've been doing them for a while. And But I never actually stood in line, waited for one, and then, like, shit, because I was with my friend Nick. And we're like, what do you want to do now? And then he's like, oh, there's another panel going on I want to go check out. And it was Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things. So we went to her Q&A, and that was a lot of fun. The day before, oh, yeah, I did want to bring this up. I did go to the Frank Miller Dark Knight panel, which was advertised as Frank Miller, Klaus Janson, and Brian Azzarello. Klaus Janson was not there. So I'm sitting down, and then Brian Azzarello and Frank Miller come out, and there is no moderator. And you cannot put two more awkward people on stage without a moderator. So it started off, Brian's like, so what do you want to talk about? I'm like, oh my God, not this shit. And so it was like 5 or 10 minutes of that before someone stepped in and set up microphones, and they're like, all right, we're going to get the Q&A started.
Mr. Miller, could you say something racist, please?
Well, I will say, I don't know if I'm impressed that it took him that long. He made it a half hour without saying something remotely racist. And at first I was like, wow, it took him that long. And then afterwards I was like, this motherfucker still doesn't get it. So it kind of annoyed me after that. I was like, fuck, I hate this because I love your work, but you're just not a good human being. But
I'm curious as to what he said.
I'm not going to get
into it. Can we repeat it without bleeping things?
Because I ended up getting into... Yeah. Well, essentially, there was this kid from the south side of Chicago. It was this Hispanic dude that said he made a shirt that said Superman was an immigrant. And Frank Miller was trying to be tongue-in-cheek about the whole thing, because then he said something about building a wall to Krypton. But he didn't stop there, where, like, you could have gotten away with, like, making a joke like that. And then he went on for, like, another, like, 40 seconds. And it got really awkward. And I was like, So it was one of those kind of things. And then the next day I was talking to someone about the comment, and who appeared to be this Frank Miller super fan. He's like, well, I didn't take it that way. And I was like, well, you're the only one, apparently, because, like, you could see the kid got a little uncomfortable after he was, like, really excited. He's like, hey, I wanted to show you I made this shirt. And then Frank Miller responded with that to, like, this, like, this Mexican dude. He's like, and he felt kind of awkward afterwards, and I felt bad, but it wasn't, he wasn't, like, blatantly racist, but it was, it's one of those things where if you know Frank Miller's, history, you kind of know what he was getting at with the comment. It's one of those things. Other than that, the Q&A was painful because everyone was asking the most mundane questions ever.
Sounds kind of cozy to me. You
know? And it was exactly what I was hoping it wouldn't turn into. And I get it. I don't want to knock people, because I've asked questions at panels before too, and not everyone's comfortable doing that kind of shit. And I understand. It's like, you're standing in a room, there are probably a couple thousand people in that room. And it's got to be nerve-wracking to some people doing that. But at the same time, like, if you're asking one of your, I don't know, like, just think about the question you're going to ask. Like, because there was all questions that when you look up like any Frank Miller interview, they've all been asked before, that kind of shit. So I don't know, but I mean, it was a good Q&A because Frank. This is the thing. I will say Brian Azzarello answered the questions in the most typical of Brian Azzarello fashion, where he was very short and like, I don't want to say snotty, but he was not having the nonsense questions, where Frank Miller at least entertained it. He was like a very good sport about the whole thing, and I thought that was very professional on his end.
If I may say, Judge, I know exactly what you're talking about. With Brian Azzarello, he has this, when they interview him, it seems like whenever you ask him something, there's this reluctancy to answer.
Yes.
And it's like, I don't want it, like you said, like a smart alecky thing, but it's almost like he feels pain. He has to answer a question. For you?
Exactly. He seems like he wants to be anywhere other than in the middle of that interview. With every single interview I've ever listened to him on, every podcast, and even, and like when you listen to when he's on Word Balloon with John Suntress, and John Suntress is the most chatty person. He conducts the best interviews because he steers conversations in ways that like a lot of other people just don't. He has this huge background in radio for years and years and years, and he knows Brian outside of outside of the podcast. Both Chicago dudes, like, they've known each other for a while, and Brian's short with him, and but John won't take his shit. He's like stop being cheeky with me, that kind of shit. But like, I think a lot of people feel intimidated by Azzarello, and I'd be kind of pissed too if I was one of the dudes asking him a question. He's very short.
That is the one I heard, the Word Balloon.
Yeah, he's awkward. He was on Comic Vine a few times, and it's painful. And I will say, if he doesn't feel comfortable doing interviews, that's not everyone does, and I understand that, but then don't agree to them, I guess. I mean, I'm sure he's, like, bound by DC to contractually do, you know, certain press for his comics and stuff like that, but still, but,
it'd be great if there was a comic equivalent to Marshawn Lynch, where it was just, like, he's standing around, and it's like, why don't you want to, and it's like, oh, just here so I won't get fined by DC or Marvel. You know, that'd be funny. Yeah.
True. But, yeah, I mean, other than that, the convention was great. The panels were amazing. The Southern Bastards panel was incredible. Jason Aaron and Jason Latour, just two hysterical people. You could see they get along so well together, and they're both very busy outside of Southern Bastards. Like, they each have their own other work. You know, Jason Latour writes Spider-Gwen and among ton of other books that he's writing, and you know, on top of that, he has to draw a monthly book for Southern Bastards, and there has been a bit of delay for Southern Bastards, and Jason Latour wanted to say, he's like, I just want to let the fans know right now, I'm very sorry that things have gotten a little hectic. And he got really emotional and started crying, and he had recently lost his father. And it was a very heavy moment, but it was like one of those things where I don't know how to describe it. Like, I felt lucky to be in that room at that time, that he doesn't, first of all, he doesn't owe anyone an explanation. Like, that's, if you want to be open with your fans, that's your prerogative, but like, you don't have, like, no one's upset about the delays for Southern Bastards. Like, no one. Like, there are books that get delayed and people bitch about, and we'll probably actually get into that with the news a little later, dealing with Batman and Flash. But Southern Bastards is not one of those titles. Like, people are so eager for what comes next. Like, no one minds the wait. I never hear people complain about it. So I don't know if people talk to them about it. But, like, I felt lucky that he trusts his fans enough to open up in that way and be so vulnerable. And like, you see a lot of that in his work, both his art and his writing. And it's things like that that make me appreciate these creators even more. Like, they're all human, and, you know, like, you and I can sit on the podcast and, like, certain things annoy the fuck out of us. And I like to think that, you know, we're not... I'd like to think that we try to accent the positive, but if things annoy us, like, we're not gonna be shy about it either if we see a problem. So, yeah, it's just books overall, really. It's entertainment. I've said this before, probably when we were talking about Tom King, but these people put themselves out there sometimes up to like 7 times a month, depending how many titles they're writing every month, and they're putting themselves in the public eye for a lot of criticism. Same thing with the actors and the writers, you know, the movies and TV shows and everything. You know, fans could be jerks and critical, and like, you're putting your money into something, you want the best product possible. But at the same time, not everything's going to be a hit. And sometimes I think it's easy to lose sight of the fact that there are human beings behind these books. Like, it's not just a character on the page that, and the story tells itself. I think it's easy to lose sight of that kind of stuff.
I've seen this, like, lots of times. It's like people, they get mad at something, and what ends up happening is that they're, like, wrong, and they're like, oh, well, I didn't know. Which, it's like, when I tend to try to think about the things before, well, I'm a quiet person usually anyway, so I don't worry about that so much, but usually... That's, you know, a lot of people just say, you know, they don't have an understanding of a situation. But then it makes you wonder, because you're like, wow, now I can't say anything because I don't know what happens.
There's a fine line between having an opinion and not understanding, I guess, what could surround the situation. I get very like that too with, you know, with television or with wrestling. I live tweet wrestling all the time, or with politics, or with whatever the fuck it is, animal rights or comic books or, you know, anything like
human wrongs.
Human wrongs. Something happens and immediately it strikes a chord with you. What, you know, good, bad, whatever the case, and you want to be vocal about it. You think you have something to say.
Minor chord.
Sometimes. But yeah, and I understand wanting to react, and like I said, I'm guilty of it. I do it myself too, but certain things just aren't worth getting annoyed over, I suppose. Although I feel hypocritical, because I feel like we're going to talk about something later, and I don't know if we're...
Probably.
I don't know. We'll get there. We'll get there when we get there. But yeah, C2E2 was great. We can wrap it up now so we can get into books. I know it's out of order. Let me jump into X-Men Blue, number 2, real quick before we jump into the other books, because I'll be very quick about this. So, yes, this is Cullen Bunn and Jorge Molina. I met Cullen Bunn again for the billionth time, by the way, and he was awesome at C2E2.
Nice.
Him and Brian Hurt. But so this book is dealing with the original 5 X-Men that have been time displaced, when, you know, the Beast brought back from the original time, and now they're in present time, and blah blah blah, and they're working with Magneto, and you're trying to figure out why they're working with him and why he's working with them. And he tries to open himself up to Jean, saying, hey, I'm being honest, you know, Charles's future was right, his vision was right, and I want to live up to his word and, you know, do right by him. And then at the end, you find out that Magneto is really just trying to, along with his metallic robot butler, they're trying to devise this device to send the original X-Men back to the young X-Men back to their time period of origin. So Magneto up to no good, like always, but this should make for an interesting story. I love it. X-Men Gold's really good too. Still interesting, very Claremontian feel, but X-Men Blue seems to be the I don't want to say the better of the two books, but it's it's got a lot going for it right now. Very, very good book. I recommend everyone jump on. I've read so much in the past couple weeks, all the X-Men stuff and The Damned. Oh, I'll talk about that on another podcast, but that's a great book. Kill or Be Killed. But yes, that's all I have to say about X-Men Blue. So shall we move on to Batman 21 and The Flash 21?
Yeah.
Kind of talk about them in conjunction.
And I like the incorporation of hockey into the comic. Because you don't see that too often. But, yeah, pretty much. Eobard, he goes back in, I guess, in time for him. And so he's in the Batcave. And then he's beating the shit out of Batman. And then
it's the it's the real quick, it's the pin, the comedian's pin that Batman got a hold of, and it reacts with Psycho Pirate's mask or something like that. I think that's how what initially sparks the whole gateway for Eobard to come into this universe.
And Batman says to Flash, "I need your help." And Flash is like, "I'll make sure to only show up after Eobard beats you up." And that's pretty much what happens.
The way that scene played out, though, with the countdown and how each frame... first of all, I love the 9-panel grid layout where they were channeling Watchmen throughout the whole book. Like, most of the pages were 9-panel grids, or a lot of the pages were, at least. So it's very Watchmen in that respect. But also the countdown, because Barry says, "I'll be there in a minute," and so you have it counting down from 60 seconds, and it's like, oh, okay, 1 minute, and the Flash will show up. But a lot happens in those 60 seconds, and I thought that was a beautiful storytelling device.
I'm not really giving it justice, but yeah, it was quite good.
I will say, I think this was Tom. If it wasn't Tom King's best issue on Batman, it was tied with Batman 18.
I don't know. I'm a big fan of the Cutter Batman.
And this is the thing. Like, I wish we got this Tom King every issue, but we don't, and it's very weird to me.
Yeah. I think eventually he'll just be done.
I still find it weird that he got thrown onto the biggest book at DC... after he wasn't writing, like, he was writing Grayson, which wasn't a huge seller, and he was co-writing with Tim Seeley. Usually when you have someone co-writing, they get moved to, like, a smaller book afterwards, but they threw him directly into Batman, which is very interesting. I don't know, maybe, I hate to say this, I don't know if he was ready to take on Batman with how up and down it's been, but I will say when Batman's been a hit, it's been incredible. It's been some of the best Batman stories when he's on his game.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the most part it's been pretty good, but the only thing is, because they're saying that, like, does that Batman 22 come out this week?
It should be this week, yes.
I'm confused about how Flash, like, wait.
So, yeah, let's just get into that news part right now, because I was skirting around it earlier.
Yes.
So.
Now we'll address it instead of skirting.
Yes. But, so Flash 21 came out last week. We'll talk about that issue in a moment, but Batman 22 is now going to have Joshua Williamson writing the issue. And then Flash 22 now gets delayed, which means this 4-week crossover between two books is delayed. And we cannot have a single crossover or event or whatever without there being fucking delays in it. And this is what I was talking about in the last episode when I was happy that Secret Empire was the last Marvel event for the next year and a half. And, you know, they promise you 8 issues, but then they tack on an issue 0, and then they add an issue 9, and then issue 9 is always 5 months late. Like, there is no reason for these things to happen, I don't think, because you're putting undue pressure on the writing team and the art team when you do these things, when you mandate, and Marvel's guilty of it too, because they kind of started this whole bi-monthly, bi-weekly, whatever the fuck it is, scheduling. And so DC wants to adhere to twice a month with every one of their big titles, and then these issues are going to happen. But they don't address it until 2 weeks or a week before one of the issues is supposed to drop. And it's very weird to me. Like, Tom King says in the interview that he thinks that Joshua Williamson could write a better story. Then why didn't he just write the entire thing? Then why isn't Joshua Williamson just writing Batman if he could write a better story?
I thought these things were, like, done, like, months ago.
They're supposed to be. They're supposed, like, the scripting is supposed to be done. The way it's supposed to work is they write the script, show it to editorial if there are issues, blah, blah, blah. You could change it, rewrite the script, send it to the artist. It's going to take the artist 3 weeks to a month to complete a 22-page comic. That's just how it is. That's how fast or slow most of these artists work. Usually 20, 22 pages, that takes about a month for them to complete. 3 weeks to a month. So now you're looking at minimum, you're looking at the scripting to be finished. Well, and then everything needs to be editorial approval and then sent out to printing. I'm guessing printing happens probably 2 to 3 weeks before distribution. You're looking at a month and a half that the comic should probably be finished before it actually hits the shelves. And I don't want to fault Tom King either completely, because I think a lot of it's on DC for making them. And a lot of it's on the fans too, and I'll get into that in a second. But DC wants this twice a month shipping schedule for books. That's where they're at. Fans get more stories a month, and that's entertaining and everything. But then when there are delays, fans get upset. And I think it's in our right to be a little upset when you're told a solicitation is put out and it says, this is going to be delivered by this creative team on this date. And when it's not met, it can be frustrating. Now, the only thing is, where do we get into? Do we get into the issues of? Do we get into? Okay, well, in order to keep a monthly or twice a month schedule, we have to alternate these art teams. Or would you rather the book be delayed and have the original art team, creative team on the book? And I think that's personal preference for each fan. I personally would like to see, if there's like a week or so delay and you're giving me the same artist, I think I'd rather take that than have a fill-in and the art be completely changed and different and take you out of the story and not fit, and maybe a lesser artist takes over. But I don't know. I feel like DC built in those excuse me. I feel like DC built in those breaks with the Night of the Monster Men crossover, and with this, technically they built in those breaks for the artists, because Howard Porter was the artist on The Flash, and who was the artist on Batman? Jason Fabok. So I mean, those aren't the artists that are on the series, you know, on The Flash or the Batman series, respectively. So those breaks are built in, but still we're running into those issues.
Well, I don't. I mean, my thinking isn't really that it's bad that only one of them is going to write it or continue on writing it. That's not my issue. My issue is just like, wouldn't you have known that a long time ago, that
exactly
one person writing that storyline, especially when it's a, I think it, there's a bigger tie-in to the whole Rebirth thing than like the Monster Men was, which was just kind of like a random thing that they threw in there.
Exactly. It was, for lack of a better term, it was a waste of time. It was really built in as a break for the artists and the writers, really. That's why you had Steve Orlando write most of those issues.
Yeah, which I think it was, that was kind of silly too, because I think, like, if you're going to do a character, I think they should continue with the same writer, you know.
Yes, yes.
At least the same writer. I mean, the artist, I guess, you know, you could switch, although I'd prefer it to be the same. But, yeah.
And that's the thing. I would like to see, first of all, I'd like to see Joshua Williamson write Batman. I'd like to see him write everything at DC. I love him as a writer. But when Tom King, I admire him being honest, saying that, you know, Joshua Williamson has probably a better grasp on the story than he does. But at the same time, for him to say something like that doesn't instill confidence in me that I'm going to get great stories out of him.
Yeah, because who's to say, he could just say, well, you know what? You know what? I think Benjamin Percy would do a better job at writing Batman than me. So I just give up. Yeah. We'll have him. I think part of it is, I mean, you're writing Batman, so you think you'd want to write Batman.
Yeah.
But this is like, it kind of gives you the feeling that maybe he doesn't really want to do it.
Maybe he's overworked, because he is writing a bunch of other books too. And I understand that. And I think Tom King's message was to say, our promise to the fan is to get them the best story possible, and that he was trying to build Joshua Williamson up. At the same time, it just made him look weak as a writer, keeping up with a twice-a-month schedule.
Yeah, he's just like, can't someone else do it? Yeah. You know, that's the vibe you get.
And the thing is, too, because with the whole Batman 22, now Flash is taking a hit because Joshua Williamson has to script someone else's book. So Flash 22 takes a delay.
Oh, so yes.
His own book is taking a delay because he has to cover someone else. Now, after that happens, we're probably going to get a new Batman issue before we get Flash 22. So by the time, so we're going to get Batman 22, Flash 22 is supposed to come out next week from when we're recording this, right? And that's probably not going to happen. So we'll get Batman 23 probably before we get Flash 22, I'm guessing.
Shouldn't Batman 22 be delayed too? Not just the Flash?
Depending on when.
Because that's the one that Tom King would have been writing.
Yes. I don't think they said that was delayed, though. I think the news article claimed that just Flash was delayed because of it.
Weird.
But it would stand to reason that Batman would be delayed. That being said, I also think there was supposed to be a story around Batman 15 when, I think it was Batman 14 and 15, that's when it turned into the two-part Catwoman story. But there was supposed to be was it Riley Rossmo on art? I forget who it was, but there was supposed to be a one-shot Batman story within the Batman title. And then that got bumped back for the Catwoman story. So now they have this inventory issue that they're using that to take place, I think, of Batman 23. So now I hope we're not going to run into some fucking Marvel craziness like Marvel in the 90s, where issue 23 would ship before issue 22. And like, that's legit shit that would happen. And I don't know, because if this is what's going on, because DC's been promoting this for months. They've been promoting this crossover for months.
Yeah, that's why I'm surprised.
If this is happening now, DC either needs to say, okay, we're done doing twice a month. Like, I will say at C2E2, at one of the DC panels, Dan DiDio said, because someone was saying, customer was complaining about twice a month, and they're like, you're still getting more of our money anyway. You're still getting $6 a month. Dan DiDio's like, yes, we're getting $6, but you're buying two books. Like, it's the same one title, but it's still two books. He's like, that being said, we're also taking a look at sales, and we're going to make changes to some of the titles that don't deserve, that don't warrant twice a month shipping. And he said Aquaman's taking a cut to once a month. I guess the sales aren't that great, shipping twice a month. That being said, maybe they're going to have to take cue and do the same thing. He justified it saying, he's like, rather than us having Batman, The Dark Knight, Detective Comics, Batman and Robin, Legends of the Dark Knight, like all these books, he's like, we have Batman and Detective Comics. So he's like, yeah, you're getting only two titles, but you're getting four issues of Batman a month.
You also get All-Star Batman.
Yeah, well, yeah, so you're getting five issues of Batman a month. But and to his point, he's correct. You're still getting the same number of issues that you were, just in less titles. But that being said, maybe that's not the issue. Maybe more titles and once a month is the way to go. Or I don't know. It showed DC made a promise, day and date, you know, with New 52, and that delays weren't going to happen. Well, you know who the first person to start fucking delaying books were Geoff Johns and Jim Lee. And of course, when you have the two people running the company, you can't say shit about it. So, you know, if they can't keep the titles going during the New 52, like, I guess maybe you can't expect other people to do the same. But I don't know. Maybe DC and Marvel both need to take a step back and start focusing on shipping one title per book, one book per title a month. If this crossover had to come out over the course of 2 months rather than 4 weeks, I wouldn't be upset by that.
Well, I guess the ones that they're supposed to come, I guess the ones they definitely got to have twice a month would be Batman and Superman.
True, but then they could, again, they can, you know, open up another Batman title and then drop one of the books down to once a month or something.
Yeah, we need another Batman title.
What's weird is, like, the last issue of Detective, maybe the last two.
I refuse to read that last issue of Detective.
I forget what number it was, but I didn't finish the issue before because I had so much trouble with it. I was completely bored, and that hasn't happened yet because I've been loving Detective. And then, so I might have missed, it's either I missed one issue because I didn't finish the issue before, or I just haven't finished the last issue. I don't remember the issue number. But now I find myself not thrilled with Detective. I find myself kind of annoyed with Batman because it's hit or miss. And like, I get really bad just as I'm talking this book back up and I'm getting super stoked on the book again. And then something like this happens where it throws off momentum. And I'm not feeling All-Star Batman. And I love Scott Snyder. He's one of my favorite writers, but I don't like that book. And even with Francesco Francavilla or Jock, like, I still am not going to read it monthly. And those are two artists that I'll buy anything by. So maybe a new Batman title is something that's necessary right now.
I mean, the reason I refuse to read Detective is I can't, because page 13 is upside down or sideways. And I even contacted Comixology. They said they'd look into it, and then they didn't. So, I understand maybe it's two pages and it's supposed to be like, you open the book and it's sideways, you know, like a centerfold type of thing if you're a perverted.
Yeah.
But the thing is, how many years have we been doing digital comics? And they knew this would arise.
True, but they ran into this issue with Batman number 5 when, in this New 52 run, when everything was all upside down and people were complaining about it, and they're like, why'd you do it this way? And they're like, this is the way it's printed. So they had to put a disclaimer before you click in, like, what you should do is
go fuck yourself, well, because you can't read sideways.
Well, what they're saying is, like, lock your screen. So, like, if you're reading it on a tablet and you tilt the screen so that now it's supposed to be, like, this double page spread, but finally it takes up like the portrait kind of view of the iPad, and then you lock the screen, and then it's easier for you to read that way.
So, oh man,
I don't know.
That's too much goddamn.
Yeah, so I didn't read that. Okay, I'm an issue and a half of Detective behind on Detective then, but
I probably will do that now that you just told me that. But I'm still like kind of mad.
I want to know if that was genuinely a goof on their part, or if that was intentional. And because I haven't seen the print version, so I'm not sure. But sure.
Yeah, if it's in, I'm trying to think if Barnes and Noble gets Detective. Yeah, I think they do. Eventually, it will get there like 3 months after the issue has arrived, and I'll look to see.
Well, that might be on purpose. That might be intentional. Because Diamond might not be down with that because of like the comic shops get pissed. I remember comic shops at first were getting pissed when digital was day and date, because digital used to be like a week behind the issues, and then some of the comic shops got bent. But then they found out that digital didn't actually hurt the comic shop sales; it actually increased it, because then people would read stuff digitally, but then they'd read issues digitally, and then they want to come and buy the trades in the comic shop.
Oh, I see.
So it was actually promoting sales. So, but That being said, like, I don't know if like Diamond had, because think of it this way too. If you look on things on in-stock trades, like Saga Book 2 came out last week on in-stock trades. If you look on Amazon, it's still technically not out, because Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the major book retailers, their cycle's on a Tuesday when comic shop's on a Wednesday. So the comic shop's a week before. So if it's not going through Diamond, it's still like a week behind, at least. Yeah, but
the future is digital, though.
Future is digital.
You know,
Flash 21. Shall we get back on? Yeah, we didn't talk about that. But yeah. So Batman 21. Batman gets the crap kicked out of him. Flash shows up late, because why wouldn't you always be late when you're the fastest man alive? But yeah, and the Flash 21 picks up where that left off, and I don't have the book open. Do you have the book open right now? I'm forgetting specifics and when they happen. But
yeah, I don't really remember this one that well.
Oh, I remember Batman explains to Flash what happened. So they end up like dusting off the what is it, the cosmic treadmill or whatever the hell it's called.
Oh wait, now I remember. This is the one where they meet Thomas Wayne.
Yes, yeah.
Which is cool.
So.
That was my favorite.
That's a hell of a cliffhanger to be dealt with a delay afterwards, too. So. It's like, oh, this really cool cliffhanger, and then the books are going to be delayed, so.
Yeah, and plus they broke the treadmill.
Yep. That was awesome, seeing them on the treadmill.
Yeah. See, Batman fucked it up because too much weight. Yeah.
If only he'd emptied some of his pouches out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so far, I like this story. I do like this crossover, despite the drama behind it. I do appreciate the crossover so far.
Yeah, I think I predicted that he was gonna meet him, probably because that was on the cover like months ago.
Yeah, I don't look at covers, so I didn't know that, and I actually saw what happened before I read it, because I opened up our Instagram.
Yeah,
and I was like, ooh, that's the thing that happened.
So. Oh, I figured it didn't matter because, like, one of the covers had Thomas Wayne on it.
I don't look at covers, so like, I didn't know that. When I pre-order, I have the option to look at the covers, but I usually, unless there's like a variant where I have the option to get and it's like an artist I like, I'll try to choose that. Like, when I would pre-order Batman, I used to just choose the Tim Sale covers, but I wouldn't even really look at them. I just know I want the Tim Sale cover over the normal cover anyway. But, no, but usually I try not to, like, read the solicitations or look at the covers. But that's just me. I know it's, like, very hard to not do that. Just because they're everywhere. Every site posts them. You know, everyone talks about them. They're in previews at the comic shops. It's kind of everywhere. So it's tough to avoid sometimes.
Hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was an awesome cliffhanger.
Just like that movie cliffhanger.
Exactly like that movie cliffhanger. Shall we talk about Arrow? Was there anything else you want to talk about the issue, or should we move on to Arrow?
Nah, that was about it. I'm sure there was other stuff that came out, but we only care about Batman and the Flash, so fuck that.
Well, and it's been so, these past few weeks have been so crazy, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I've been forgetting what I've been reading weekly and what I've been reading in trades, and
yeah.
Like, I read a few issues in Ninja Turtles a couple days ago, trying to catch up with that.
Yeah, there was some sale on the...
Yeah, in Comixology. Did you buy any?
No, and now it's over.
Dude, that book is so good, though.
Yeah.
But, alright, so I have one request for Arrow, and I'm hoping that Guggenheim and Berlanti and Kreisberg and Jeff Johns and
Wendy Miracle.
Yep. Stephen Amell. Hope you're all listening.
The guy who plays the Count.
Yep. Him too. And especially Felicity.
Mm-hmm.
Please kill Felicity. Please, that's my one request. I'm done with this character. I can't. Yeah. I've been struggling with her for a while now, and she's the most insufferable character.
Yeah, now she's like Rhythm Nation. That's her outfit.
Rhythm Nation. But what happens is what's it, Prometheus or whatever the hell his name is, still missing. And they, Argus has one of the hackers in their, you know, that in their like illegal prisons that they're, you know, they got them all held up some like offsite 12 miles away from the Argus facility. And it turns out that he was working with what's the name of Felicity's hacker group?
I want to say Beatrice, but that's not it.
Okay, so he's working for Beatrice, and we're just going
to... Matrix? No.
Maybe. Matrix? I'm going to say Beatrice. So he's working for Beatrice, but he got captured like 8 months ago or something like that. And they know that all the members of Beatrice know that he's the hacker that if they free... First of all, they want their dude freed. Second of all, you know, they can track... He can help them track Prometheus. So Felicity wants to free whatever his name was from
Argus. Helix, is it?
Helix, yeah. So she wants to free the Helix hacker that, you know, is imprisoned by Argus. And Diggle gets pissed off because his wife is essentially turning into Amanda Waller. And she says multiple times throughout the episode, things look differently from this side of the desk or something like that. And I thought it was, I get it, but it's such a weak justification for her writing the, like, just because Waller's gone, they're like, oh shit, we still need a Waller-esque character. So like, we have to start writing, what's her name? What's her name? The character's name? Why can't I remember anything? Diggle's wife.
Lila.
Lila, thank you. They have to start writing Lila like Amanda Waller now. It's, I don't know, it's weird. But
the Wall.
Yes, like FYE. But
for your entertainment.
I don't know. Oliver tries to talk some sense in Felicity. She's not having it. I can't with her anymore. I can't. Yeah. Because then it was the whole rest of the episode, Ollie and Diggle are all moping about how Felicity is the best person we know and she wouldn't do this kind of stuff and blah, blah, blah. And no, she isn't. She hasn't been that person for seasons. That's not the character she is now.
Yeah.
It's that same logic of in BVS, them looking back, you know, wistfully at Superman's father and how he pushed him to be this superhero or whatever the fuck it was, when that wasn't the case at all in the first movie.
Yeah, that's really funny when you watch that and you're like, wait a second.
That's the
vibe. He's the dream of a farmer from Kent. No, that's exactly the opposite.
Dude, that's the
vibe. He said hide. He said if there's a choice to help people, he said if there's help you can do right in front of, go out of your way not to help. That's what he did in the first movie.
Exactly, and that's what I kept thinking of during this scene. Because I'm like, this isn't... They haven't written Felicity like that in two seasons. That's not who Felicity is anymore. That's not her as a character.
We might be getting our hopes up with John Barrowman with Merlin. Because they were saying that he's not going to be back next year.
I know, I'm excited for that. I love John.
So they're probably going to kill him off.
I love John Barrowman to death, but I am so glad that I just don't want to see that character come back. I don't want to see him. I don't want to see Damian Dark. I don't want to see Deathstroke. I don't want to see Count Vertigo. I don't want to see any of these old villains or adversaries or anyone
involved. Now, I want to see Count Vertigo come back. The original one that was like Count Chocula.
I'll allow it, but I'll allow that one. But
you want to know something funny?
Yes.
By happenstance, because for some reason I follow Warner Brothers on Facebook, and they had a Facebook Live thing, and guess who was doing the Facebook Live?
Count Vertigo.
Yeah, it was Seth Gable, and I was like, holy shit. So I immediately typed the count in all caps with an exclamation point. There was no response, because this is at the very end.
Awesome.
But yeah.
No, but, I mean, I don't want to see a lot of those characters come back, and I'm over Prometheus, too. I want to see multiple villains per season, rather than one that takes up the entire season with, like, a few others thrown in. I want to see, I propose that we do 4 to 5 to 6 episode arcs, and then you move on to the next story. While you can have, the B plot line, dealing with one of the main characters and their struggles or something, or I don't know what it is. Like Lance being an alcoholic, you could still run with something like that. Or Felicity being a hacker, you'd still run with those kind of storylines, even if you're moving from villain.
Well, they're
villain,
saying
villain,
that
villain,
villain.
So
that They were saying that there's supposed to be a lot of deaths, like, in the finale or something.
No one stays dead, though.
Hmm.
Except for Tommy.
Well, we know... Did we mention this the last time, that Nyssa's coming back, which I predicted?
Yes.
I knew it.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Because I was like, that's gotta be the whole reason for bringing Talia in the first place, so they can face off.
Yeah.
Do you know about other people that are coming back?
I don't. Do I want to know? Am I going to be happy or am I going to be annoyed?
I'll be happy, but I don't know. You might be happy. Unhappy.
Tommy?
No! If it was Tommy, I would be jumping for joy.
Let me guess. Laurel's coming back.
I think she's signed on for something next year, but I think it's, like, still that imposter siren Laurel.
Okay. Who else is coming back then?
This isn't really a spoiler, because it was in that teaser that I sent you.
I'm sure I watched, because I watched the teaser too, but I don't, I seriously have retained nothing between the last couple weeks of Con and me having Con crud and my brain being fried from being down with the sickness. who else is coming back?
This villain from earlier seasons.
This will take away Deathstroke.
Yes.
Okay. No, I don't want to see him anymore.
No, but this is the thing. It looks like Oliver's coming back. In the trailer, Oliver comes back, and you don't see Deathstroke, but you hear his voice, but he goes in that little Lian Yu Guantanamo shelter bay, and actually, no, it's more of like a solitary confinement, but you see Oliver walking in there, and he's like, "Hey, kid, I want a koala and some didgeridoos." Nah, he doesn't say that. But he does say, like, he's like, "Oh, hey, kid, thanks. I knew you'd come back," or some shit like that. So that was in the teaser.
Jesus.
So I would assume he's coming back.
That okay. You know what? I'm gonna rescind my hatred and my spite and venom. That might be kind of cool, actually.
If they teamed up, because, I mean, they've been teasing, like, ooh, Oliver's going to team up with an unlikely person, which that could be Nyssa, and maybe this is, like, a decoy. I don't know.
Him teaming up with Nyssa isn't unlikely, though.
Yeah, because they've done it before.
Yeah.
She's technically still his wife.
Seriously.
That's what was great when Nyssa would appear in, like, season 4, was it? And she'd be like, whenever she'd say something, and she wouldn't call him Oliver, she'd call him husband. That was funny.
Yeah, yeah. It's better than Damien Dark, I suppose.
Yeah, which, I like the actor, but it's just too much.
Agreed. I have no qualms with the people acting. It's the character. It's when you give me 23 straight episodes, or like Merlin, you give us, like, I don't know, 69 straight episodes of shit.
The problem with Damien Dark was they depowered him, and that should have been the end of it, but then they, like, oops, psych, here's your powers back.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was stupid. That's how they messed up.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, did you see the teaser for this week's episode?
I watched it, and again, I don't remember.
Okay.
Oh, about the explosions and Felicity not being able to walk. It looks like she's going to be back like in the chair.
Yeah, it's the return of Hot Wheels.
Which, they should have left her in the chair to begin with, and not been able to, like, I think they were afraid of writing a disabled character all the time like that. I think that's, like, the vibe I get. Like, that's the only reason they healed.
Now we gotta
quickly
make this goddamn set wheelchair accessible.
They need to just kill her off.
Yeah, and she'll have her walking powers back by the end of the episode.
Probably, yes. She'll be able to fly by the end of the season.
Luckily, I brought my lost my ability to walk because of an EMP repellent. That's what they should do. You know what? They might be better off, Arrow, if going forward they just go full on like Batman 66, where it's just like campy.
Sharks attacking the helicopters.
Yeah.
Yes.
They might be better off at this point.
Probably. You're right. Probably. And Arrow's still good and enjoyable. But Felicity needs to get eaten by a shark with frickin' laser beams on its head.
Yeah. Pretty much.
I don't know. That's all I have to say about Arrow. I don't know. It was frustrating because the entire time I'm yelling at the TV, just kill Felicity.
Yeah.
Even I guess there was Caroline, who hates the show, she's just like, yeah, this chick needs to die.
Well, we had that subplot of, like, Wild Dog getting his daughter back. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm not worthy of my daughter because I accidentally spilled soup on her.
I know.
I'm a danger to society.
And he's like, I hurt her. And I was like, oh, my God, they're going to go. He like, hit his child. And they're going to, like, do this. Like, this is a bold move.
Cut me a switch.
And then he's like, I spilled soup on her. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I left out some marbles and she tripped over them. I'm a monster.
You know what would be more offensive? If he, like, switched toothpaste with sunscreen and then she brushed her teeth with that. Like, then I'd be like, yo, you're a terrible dad. But, like, he's like, I spilled soup on her. And I'm like, you're just clumsy, dude. That's... Okay.
Unless he intentionally threw it. Like if he dumped, like, a soup pot on her head, then I'd say, yeah, maybe. Maybe you need some help there.
I don't know. I don't feel like they're like they want to be edgy with him. They want him to be this badass, but they don't want to go too far to make the character unlikable. I think that's the problem they're at. So they're like, he has to hurt her, but it can't be intentional, and it can't be. And
hold on a sec. Sorry. Or is it too late? Cause you gotta get up early.
You're on the phone. Okay. All right. So I'll put this stuff away.
Okay. So what were you saying about wanting to pour soup on my head?
I don't remember. But I think they want to make him edgy, but they don't want to go too far, is what they're saying. Because they don't want to make him an unlikable character. But
yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. But... Yeah, but do you want, since we're on the TV show talk, shall we talk Powerless?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
How it's not officially canceled.
Yeah, it's not on Thursday anymore, but no, it's canceled.
They pulled it, but it's not canceled. So I don't understand why this show is in limbo. This show is the highlight of my week. I think it's funny. I think it's hysterical, actually. Caroline watched an issue. She watched an episode with me, and she was cracking up too. So, I mean, she has no desire to watch it again, but she enjoyed what she watched. But the last episode when they were going to go on that work trip,
mm-hmm.
and they retreat, and then they get stuck in the building, and it's like the truth serum leaks out.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, it's so good.
So yeah, good. I was just I forget. Oh yeah, wasn't like Adam West supposed to be on some episode?
I don't know. I know he did the narration for the first episode.
But I think they were saying he was gonna do a cameo or something.
Maybe you're right, yeah.
Maybe it's in one of the episodes we don't get to see.
Maybe, but if that being said, they either need to, if they cancel the show, they need to release those episodes that they didn't air either on a Blu-ray set or DVD set or
streaming,
or put it to, you know, Hulu or Netflix or something.
Or that new service that they want to do.
Yes. Okay. Well, we can talk about that now too. So all this news is connected. So really, really like the Jeff Johns, the DC, launches digital service, and Young Justice can all be like talked about right now too.
Yes,
like you were saying about. So do you want to talk about this new service?
Yeah, I think like months ago I mentioned that in the process of me complaining every day about that there's no DC Unlimited like Marvel Unlimited. They I heard something, a rumor that they wanted to kind of package this streaming thing. Does DC with possibly like comics or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that they wanted to do something like that. And we still don't know about the comic aspect, but now it looks like that they're doing some digital service they announced recently, which it's gonna be, you know, what's starting it off is Young Justice Season 3 and this Titan show, which is gonna be produced by Greg Berlanti, and I'm sure the Guggenheim and all those other people will probably be involved.
Sure. And yeah. Which makes me think that I didn't see any confirmation, but it makes me think that because Berlanti's behind it, that it will be part of the greater, like, Arrowverse.
Yeah, which made me think, like, why didn't they just have it on CW?
Probably for the same reason. They didn't have Constantine on CW, and they had that on NBC. When we find out that that's... They want to say it's not part of the Arrowverse, but when you have that character show up in an episode of Arrow, like, you confirm that it's part of the Arrowverse.
So, yeah, that happened after it got canceled.
Yeah, yeah. So, I'm sure it's whatever network bids the highest. You know, if NBC wants to give it a little more money and CW wants to put their, you know, but they're like, oh, we have one more season of The 100 that we want to show. You know, and they don't want to cut out any space or whatever. But what, you know, what they could start doing too, and I think I kind of talked about this last time, maybe, but how I brought this up. iZombie's on a shortened season schedule, and I think it's the perfect fit. And how Legends of Tomorrow is a shortened, you know, it's an abbreviated season. I think they could start doing that with some of these shows too. So maybe they could have brought, you know, Teen Titans to CW to begin with, or maybe it doesn't have the budget. Maybe Warner Brothers proper will give the TV show a bigger budget because it's on the digital platform rather than because it's on CW, or, you know, I'm sure there's a lot behind it too. Plus you need like a flagship title to kind of stand behind to launch the service, to give people something to entice them, you know, to entice.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm just, I guess Constantine, they really could have moved that over to CW, because with CW, I think you need like 10% of the viewers you would need on like NBC or something.
Yeah, it's got to be much, much smaller because it's a smaller market.
So it's like Powerless probably would have been doing very well on CW.
I guarantee you're right, but because it's an NBC show, that's probably where the issue lies. That being said, I wonder if they would not be opposed to bringing back Powerless or Constantine on the digital platform. So, what's the name of the digital service?
I don't think it has a name yet.
Okay. But I know it airs in 2018, I think is when it... Yeah, it was in 2018.
It's going to be something, I guess, where it's like you have to log on to the internets.
Yeah,
it'll be like DC Netflix.
Yeah, exactly, the Netflix of DC, so... I'm just excited, first of all, for Young Justice Season 3, because that's long overdue. Also, Titans should be pretty, pretty, pretty awesome.
Yeah, from the description, it seems like it's like the classic team.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's not connected to the whole, like, which it wouldn't be anyway, but it's not connected with the movies, because... I remember they were saying, like, you know, with the Titans, and they're making a Nightwing movie.
Yep.
So it's not going to be related.
Well, and what's going to be huge for this Titan show as well is that Geoff Johns is writing it. He's going to be one of the writers behind it. So that's pretty awesome. He has a much revered run on Teen Titans. Which I actually have not read, but people swear up and down by that run. So you have someone who knows the characters inside and out, and, you know, has written a book in which people adore. I will trust him to pen a good show.
Yes.
Trying to look to see if there was any other date besides 2018, because I think that's the only service launching in 2018. I thought for some reason I read that it was like mid next year or something, but I don't know. We're already in May, so 2018 really isn't that far away.
Yep.
This is going to be awesome, though. So, this is from Hollywood Reporter. I'm just going to read directly from it. This is about Titans. Titans follows a group of young, soon-to-be superheroes recruited from every corner of the DC universe. The series centers on Dick Grayson as he emerges from the shadows to become the leader of a fearless band of new heroes, including Starfire, Raven, and many others. The series is an adaptation of the comic book series, which launched in the early 60s. So, Starfire, Raven, Robin, or Nightwing, or whatever incarnation of Dick Grayson, Agent 37, whatever. But this should be cool. So, and
they gotta have Chris O'Donnell play Nightwing.
Only if George Clooney would be his ward.
Yeah, I saw that Val Kilmer was saying that, like, they asked him if he would play Batman, so, like, the news headlines are like, well, Val Kilmer wants to play Batman again.
God. That's gotta be so frustrating.
Mm-hmm. I botch it. I got no life. What am I gonna do? I'll always watch another Batman thing. I don't care.
I don't know. I'm looking forward to that. Just, I'm really also, I will say, you know, because we established that Berlanti and all of them are listening earlier when I pleaded to kill Felicity. I have one more plea, and then I'm done for this episode. But my plea is, don't
bring back the count.
I have two more pleas. Please bring back the count. But also, I beg of you, do not make these seasons 23 episodes. I really hope that they're going to go like the Marvel Netflix route and do 8 to 10 to 13 episodes for Titans, because that's prime right there. That's primo.
Hmm. I watched some of that Superhero Encoded.
So did I.
It was on before we started. It was like at 7, it started airing again.
Yeah. I have the DVR set for the second episode tonight.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's like multiple parts.
Yeah, the first episode's really good so far. They have everyone in it. They had Mark Waid talking, and of course Brad Meltzer is on there a lot because he does the History Channel Decoded, so I kind of expected to see him a lot.
It's John, Grant Morrison.
John Cassaday, Grant Morrison, Scott Snyder appeared, Scott Aukerman. I think it's Travis Langley. He's the one who wrote, I think that's his name, he wrote Batman and Psychology, which is a really good book. Man, they just have a ton of comic writers on there, and they talk about the Trinity quite a bit. They talk about Captain America quite a bit. So yeah, no, it's been very interesting so far. I want to kind of talk about it as a whole after the series concludes. I will say they're not breaking any ground in saying anything that I haven't heard before. Except for, I think it was, I forget which creator of Superman it was, but the year that he came up with Superman, Superman was published in 1938, but he actually came up with the idea in 1932. But they people later found out that, that's the year that his father died. So it wasn't like the world that created Superman, really. It was like this kid needing an outlet, you know.
And, yeah, I didn't see that part.
Yeah, that was right at the very end. But
yeah, I just remember them talking about like there were some Poindexters from Ohio.
Yeah,
and this he had a nightmare about some Superman.
It's very interesting. Very interesting. So.
And you got Grant Morrison. Ooh, Superman Zeus.
I was going to say, they could just have him talk the entire episode. He wrote a book about it.
I'd listen to him talk.
Yeah. He's such an interesting human being.
Yeah.
But yes. Here, I do have to jet now. So let's, shall we
Lucky
wrap this up,
Dave? You got your rocket pack.
I'm a rocket man.
You're a rocket ear.
With a rocket plan. Yes, I guess that about does it then. So, see if I can get through this without screwing up again. I've been off my game lately. So yes, thank you, listeners. Listener. Once again, for tuning in, we very much appreciate it. If you wouldn't mind, go follow us on Facebook, give us a little like-see, Instagram, where I don't really update much from conventions, but I did at C2E2, so if you want to check out any C2E2 pictures, I posted some creators and cosplayers and panels and stuff like that, so there's that, and then whatever other fun stuff we decide to throw up on their Twitter or on the Twitter as well. And however you're checking this out, you know, whatever application you are using to listen to us, we appreciate it. If it happens to be iTunes, if you wouldn't mind rating and reviewing us, I know a lot of people don't seem to like that app. So if it's Stitcher or anything else, and I'm not sure if you could really rate or review us on there, but if you can.
But which one do they not like?
A lot of people don't like iTunes, like the interface, and it used to crash all the time.
Oh.
So a lot of people use Stitcher and all that stuff, whatever else we're on. But yes, so thank you for checking us out. And we also have comicsreviews.com. You can check out our website. You could find us individually online. You could find me at Call This Rational on Instagram. And at Petanato Rob on Twitter, and let's talk wrestling together. But Dave, where can you be found? I noticed you had a name change.
Yeah. Yes, I am now the unpronounceable symbol on Instagram.
Is your Twitter still the same?
It's still the same.
Excellent. Unpronounceable symbol is probably too long for Twitter, actually.
Hmm.
But
we'll see.
But yeah, so thank you everyone once again for tuning in, and thank you for being patient. I know our recording schedule has this has been my fault for being busy the past couple weeks with conventions and whatnot. But
that's a tennis term.
What's a tennis term?
Fault.
That is a tennis term. That's also a science term.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's also...
Or if you go to the Nyack Mall, there's fault lines all over it.
That's true.
Because Thor wielded his hammer and he smashed it.
He layeth the hammer down.
Yep.
And on that note. But, yeah, so thank you, and until next time...